Okay, we're now going to jump to agenda item 11, which is the TMDL for chlorpyrifos and diazinon in the Pajaro River watershed. Mr. Harris.
This agenda item is a total maximum daily load for chlorpyrifos and diazinon in the Pajaro River watershed. The goal for establishing these TMDLs is to rectify water quality impairments due to chlorpyrifos and diazinon, thereby providing support for aquatic life-related beneficial uses. The agenda item proposes adoption of the TMDL through a resolution. Shanta Keeling will be presenting this item.
Quick point of order. I wasn't aware we were skipping 7 through 10. I'm fine with it. I just was confused.
Okay. Well, we're just...
We're not skipping them. We're just taking
this
out of
order.
Oh, yeah.
We're just taking... We're moving 11 up on the agenda.
Yeah. Thank you.
But we're not skipping those other items.
It might be a good opportunity to just remind everyone that the numeric order that they're listed is not necessarily the numeric order in which they'll be taken. It's just for organizational purposes.
Does the public know that when they come to?
It is actually in the agenda materials.
Great, thank you.
Okay, is my mic on? Yes. Also, just to address your question, we also noted that in the Lyrist notice when we sent this out for this item that this might be taken earlier, just to alert the public.
You're welcome. So good morning, Chairman Young and members of the board. My name is Shanta Keeling, and I work in the TMDL unit. Can you hear me okay? Sometimes my voice, I don't want to shout, but okay.
I can.
Okay. And this is my supervisor, Chris Rose. Today, we're here to consider adoption of the TMDL for chlorpyrifos and diazinon in the Pajaro River watershed. Our recommendation is that you adopt the resolution which adopts the TMDL. This TMDL is not being adopted through a basin plan amendment, but through the Central Coast Water Board's approval of a resolution which includes findings that compliance with the agricultural order will implement the TMDL. In other words, the TMDL is a plan and will be implemented through the agricultural order. No new regulation is proposed. You'll notice a supplemental sheet in front of you in attachment 4, public comments and staff responses. In the introductory paragraph there, I refer to this as a basin plan amendment. This is not a basin plan amendment. This is being adopted through a resolution. The Pajaro River watershed is located in the northern part of our region, here in purple. The area includes 4 counties, Monterey, Santa Cruz, Santa Clara, and San Benito counties. Here's a closer view of the watershed, and I'm only showing you the lower portion of the watershed because we did not find impairments for chlorpyrifos and diazinon in the upper reaches of the watershed. The water bodies highlighted in blue are the impaired water bodies. In this view, brown represents agriculture, yellow are grazing lands, red are urban areas, and green is the undeveloped land. The Pajaro River is impaired for chlorpyrifos and diazinon. The Pajaro River estuary is impaired by diazinon, and Yagas Creek is impaired by chlorpyrifos. Now, I'm going to go into a little more detail about these impairments here. So first off, you can see the first two. The Pajaro River and Yagas Creek, they're on the 303D list of impaired water bodies, and we confirmed this existing impairment with newer data. So those are those first two lines on there. They're on the 303D list, and we confirmed impairment. Now, if you go down to Miller's Canal and Furlong Creek, you can see that they are also on the 303D list of impaired water bodies. However, upon closer inspection of the data, each site had a data point that was counted as an exceedance when, in fact, the data was flagged as does not qualify and it shouldn't have been counted. And so we removed those exceedances, and after we did the math, there's no impairment due to the listing policy. So those are not considered impaired anymore. Excuse me. The Pajaro River and the Pajaro River estuary are not on the 303D list right now, But based on more recent data, they are considered impaired by diazinon. And we are addressing these water body pollutants in this TMDL, and we are allowed to do so through federal and state law. They allow us to address these water bodies in this manner. The aquatic habitat beneficial uses are the ones that are impaired in this watershed. Irrigated agriculture is the remaining source of chlorpyrifos and diazinon in this watershed, and we made this conclusion based on the pounds of pesticide applied near sampling stations, proximity of application of these chemicals, both spatially and temporally when compared with an exceedance, and grower self-reported information that some of them are still applying these chemicals. The TMDL is a concentration-based TMDL and is equal to the numeric targets. And this TMDL is the same as these three previously adopted TMDLs. The proposed allocations and numeric criteria are the numbers you see in front of you here, and they are in the agricultural order. And these allocations are to irrigated agriculture. Implementation of the current agricultural order should achieve this TMDL. No new action is required. With regards to monitoring, the cooperative monitoring program is scheduled to sample in 2014 for both toxicity and pesticides, and the Central Coast ambient monitoring program is scheduled in their rotational sampling to sample this watershed in 2016. The target date to achieve the allocations, numeric target, and the TMDL in these impaired water bodies is October of 2016. This slide is to show you that the annual usage of these pesticides are really dramatically decreasing. Just to orient you, on the x-axis are the years. On the y-axis, we have the pounds per chemical applied. And you can see, hopefully you can see the colors, but basically the point is, between 2000 and 2006, the annual usage was, upwards of 2,000 pounds of these chemicals. And you can see that by 2012, we're at about 300 pounds, and I anticipate that use to go down even further as time progresses. This slide, again, shows a picture of the lower watershed. And if you look at the green dots, those represent all the people that are enrolled in the agricultural order. And the red dots are those ranches that have applied chlorpyrifos or diazinon in the last 12 months or plan to apply it in the future. And I just want to note that there's just over 100 ranches applying chlorpyrifos and diazinon in this watershed right now as of June 2013 is when I pulled these numbers. And I wanted to note that this number is down even just from October of last year when there was somewhere more around 170 folks who were applying this or planning to apply it. And I really would like to acknowledge that many people, Department of Pesticide Regulation, US EPA, working groups, individual growers and working groups, they have been really instrumental in addressing these environmental problems associated with chlorpyrifos and diazinon. There have been changes in application procedures, application rates, engineering controls, management practices, and all of these have likely helped reduce the levels of chlorpyrifos and diazinon entering surface waters in recent years. We held two public workshops in Watsonville in both August and December of 2012 to discuss this TMDL and take questions. And we posted an early draft of this TMDL before the workshop in December for stakeholders' early review and to let them know what this was going to look like. And also, this TMDL was available for public comment, and we received comments from Grower Shipper Organization and US EPA. US EPA recommends adoption of this TMDL and expressed their support. And with Grower Shipper, in general, Grower Shipper asked that the board delay adoption of this TMDL until more samples were taken. And more details can be found about their comments in attachment four, which we addressed. We agree that more samples, with more samples, some of these impairments could be delisted, which is a reason for us to move forward with this TMDL, as it could be a success story for agriculture. with regards to delaying this TMDL, we're required by federal law to develop and receive approval for these TMDLs. US EPA and the State Water Resources Control Board direct us to develop TMDLs, and we recommend adoption of this TMDL today. So in summary, the Pajaro River watershed is impaired by chlorpyrifos and diazinon. Existing efforts should correct the problem, and the agricultural order is the regulatory mechanism with which this TMDL will be implemented. So our recommendation is that you approve the resolution which will adopt this TMDL.
Shanta, could you back up to the graph that showed the usage or the poundage?
Yes.
That one. So this is a reduction in poundage applied, and this is self-reported.
This is self-reported. They need to report this to Department of Pesticide Regulation, okay. And then the County Ag Commissioners is where I got the data for 2011 and 12.
So are they replacing these chemicals with any other chemicals?
That's a good question. I actually asked Department of Pesticide Regulation and some of the Ag Commissioners that very question, and it's not a straight answer. There are some substitutions that they can use, but it's not universal. It really depends on the crop, depends on the area. Some are using more integrated pest management in terms of rotating their crops, and some people are still using it, but their management practices are really improving. I'll give you a quick example. With granular application of the chlorpyrifos, I think there used to be some trouble with turning. The granular application would go in the rows, and they'd turn, and there might be some spillage, but it would be right next to the ditch or the waterway. And so controls such as that, I think, are really improving it, not getting off-site. So, did I answer your question?
Yes, kind of. Okay. And okay. With our sampling that's going to take place, are we going to be able to pick up any new chemicals that they may be applying?
Well, that's a good question. That's one of the reasons why we have the numeric targets for sediment and water toxicity. So if there's a chemical change, we will look at whether these water samples are exhibiting toxic effects or not.
But we would see toxicity regardless, right, of the chemical constituent. It would still be toxic. We wouldn't know what's causing it.
Yes, yes.
So I want to know if we're doing anything to look and see if there's any new chemicals appearing in the water bodies.
So with my understanding is that with the agricultural order, what we do is, of course, they're sampling for toxicity, like you said, and then we can then ask them to do for a TIE, which is a toxicity identification evaluation. So if it ends up being toxic for some reason and we don't see a corresponding, let's say, hit for chlorpyrifos or diazinon, so we don't know which chemical they're using, then with the monitoring and reporting requirements that we have with the agricultural order, then we can simply ask them to do a TIE to figure out what's causing the toxicity.
Okay.
So it isn't automatic. It isn't automatic, but we can do that.
Well, we had this discussion when we were doing the ag order, and staff wanted to use these two chemicals in the ag order specifically, when DPR has a whole list of chemicals that they deem to be just as toxic as these two. And at least some board members, I know myself, was interested in maybe just adopting the whole list and throwing it into the ag order so that we could capture everything. So we didn't go that route. We just got these two. And staff had said, well, you know, we can address that as time goes on. I just want to make sure that staff is going to do this.
So Actually the water boards are moving more towards an integrated approach in terms of water quality, and toxicity is one of those that kind of is an umbrella way to measure the health of the watershed. And what Mr. Rose described is correct. So we're really – if the water's not toxic
– no need to look.
That's right. There's no need to look. And there are so many chemicals and – you know, pesticide industry is constantly changing those chemicals. So to try to set up a system to monitor individual chemicals would be very, very difficult and very, very costly. But monitoring for toxicity gives us, if we get a hit on toxicity, then we start looking for the individual pesticide. And what Chris was talking about is consistent with all of the other regions. Region 2, a couple years ago, adopted an Urban Creeks pesticide, TMDL, to deal with diazinon chlorpyrifos, but they took the same approach in terms of toxicity, knowing that there would be replacement pesticides in the future, the pyrethroids, and so they're focused on toxicity also.
Well, I just want to make sure that we're looking, taking the next step when we do get hits of toxicity that we can't otherwise explain.
We would then drill down to find out what is causing the toxicity.
Okay. Any other board questions for staff before we move on to speakers? Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, just briefly, Ms. Keeling, and we discussed this in our when I was briefed on this before today's meeting. Grower Shipper raises a question. It's on page 5 of the comments and responses to comments, comment 1.4, there's some duplication because we are taking the allocations in tandem, and if either chlorpyrifos or diazinone is present at half the LC50 level, that it should not be a problem. And can you just clarify that question? Because when we discussed it in the briefing, your sense was that they misunderstood how this was written, and I'd just like to get that out there because I'm still struggling with it a lot.
Well, you know what? After our conversation, I'll just walk you through this. Originally, I thought her question stemmed from she wanted a derivation of where these numbers came from. And so in my responses, I referenced a document that went through and referenced exactly the derivation of this and why there's additive toxicity. However, after we talked and we looked at this, we think that what she meant was instead of LC50, what we have in our additive toxicity equation in the TMDL is actually a loading capacity. And so it's not an LC50 at all. And so I think this question was actually a misunderstanding. So that she's talking about LC50, and in fact it's not an LC50. The lethal concentration, LC50 meaning a lethal concentration of test organisms at 50%. So I believe this is a misunderstanding of when she asks this question. And in fact, the concentrations for chlorpyrifos and diazinon that we have for numeric targets were developed through California Fish and Wildlife to come up with those concentrations. And then the additive toxicity was derived from those numbers, not the other way around. Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure. So what your, in terms of allocations 1-2, I'm just trying to understand it better because this is new information for me. So you're saying that this is not a lethal concentration. LC50 is not 50% of lethal concentration. This is a load concentration.
Loading capacity.
Loading capacity. So it. Okay. So in terms of what the comment is, that allocations 1 and 2. Are duplicative in tandem of allocation 3, duplicative of allocation 3 in tandem and taken individually are overly stringent. Can you just respond to that a little bit?
I'm not 100% sure of what that means, okay. But since they're organophosphate pesticides, they exhibit a toxic effect to the organisms they're intended to kill.
they act the same way. So even though we have a set target for chlorpyrifos and a set target for diazinon, if they're both present at the same time, they'll exhibit additive effects. And so we think it's important to have that in there, that if they're both present in the watershed, it's going to be more toxic. We can't just have the numeric targets, I'll call them A and B. We need to have something a little more stringent because it's going to be more toxic.
So then if I understand correctly, essentially if they're both present, then you measure them as if they were the same thing in terms of increased toxicity. So if only one of them is present, then a greater concentration is allowed potentially than if that were present and the other one were present in equal amount.
That's correct.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, any other board questions for staff at this point? Okay, let's then move on to we have two speaker cards. All right, Abby Taylor Silva and Steve Shemek.
Good morning, Chairman Young and fellow board members. Abby Taylor Silva with the Grower Shipper Association of Central California. Thank you. Appreciated this discussion. And I want to summarize a little bit our letter, but also a few other points that have come up since we submitted our letter. So as you noted, looking at this graph, many of these data points are as old as 7 years. And we just feel that knowing that the application of these materials has decreased, especially looking at 2011, it only represented 7.2% of what had been applied in 2000, and we know that that's continued to decrease, as you can actually see on this updated graph. And that's substantial, and it's also showing up in the tests that are being done, so I'm going to talk about that. We suggest that you delay implementation until more samples can be collected, and we have a way for you to be able to do that, we feel, in a very time-effective manner. Preservation Inc. submitted to the regional board in May showing a few more non-detects, which means that now you would only need to do 4 more samples for chlorpyrifos and 3 more for diazinon to delist and render this TMDL unnecessary. It's our belief that just these few more sample points could result in delisting of this watershed for chlorpyrifos. And we also believe that this data could eliminate the need to delist the Pajaro River and the Pajaro River estuary as impaired due to diazinon, and thereby rendering a TMDL and a 303 delisting unnecessary. GSA is willing to pay for the costs to sample. Regarding what is needed to do to delist, it's not so much a matter of time or a number of years from what we understand. It's relative to the number of exceedances, so I want to lay out a few options. You would need 4 more clean samples to delist, and those samples could cover testing for both chlorpyrifos and diazinon. And provided that you would have no further samples of either, I would assume that we could then move forward with the delisting process. In terms of the timing to do so, it probably would not meet your priorities to do all 4 samples at the same time, and we appreciate and understand that. Preservation Inc. will naturally be taking samples in this fall, October, November, January and March of 2014, April, June of 2014, and then in September of 2014, which means that's a 14-month period. That may be too long. So they would also be able to take these samples during their monthly samples. And all this means is that they would do additional tests. And as I said, Grower Shipper would be very happy to pay for that cost. We are making the suggestion both because we feel that it's important for our members' time, as this does affect the ag order and other. The ag order is affected, we believe, by TMDLs and changes to the basin plan, but also because we feel like this is an opportunity for the regional board to conserve and reprioritize staff time and resources. Just asking for 4 more months, if you agree to that time schedule, to do a few more tests, knowing that there were a few tests inserted in May that have shown non-detects, we think that this would be prudent and a good use of your staff time. This is very likely an unnecessary TMDL determination at this time, and we would be very happy to, one, fund this testing, two, work with staff to determine how to get these delisted immediately. And on that note as well, I'd be interested to hear, as I didn't know in the staff report, and perhaps I missed it, what the process would be to delist if we did, if this TMDL is implemented and then we find multiple non-detects in the next year or so. So ending with a question and also presenting an opportunity for further information.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Abby?
Well, I got two. I don't know if they're both. One's for Abby and one's for the staff. Abby, what are you asking for a time delay? What is the total time?
It's really up to what the staff and the board feels is most prudent, and it could be four tests taken in 2 weeks. It could be four tests taken every month for the next few months, which means that you would have probably in November you would know. Or it could mean tests taken over the next 14 months with Preservation Inc. It's really up to the board. We are ready, willing, and able to fund these tests whenever you'd like to take them.
And my question to the staff is, if we approve this TMDL today, and then we find the tests when they come in, that there's no detector, they below the threshold, that we could delist this, then how much time would it take to turn that around? I think that's what Abby's asking.
Yeah.
So let's ask staff that question once we finish with Mr. Shimmick.
Okay.
And then we'll have staff address that for us.
Okay.
And because that's going to be a question I think we're all going to share in.
Well, my point is if the tests are going and if the graphs continue to go in the direction that they're going.
Right.
And the tests continue to show that it's going in the right direction, then why do have the staff do all the work to put this in, and then we turn around and we have to reverse all that? And it seems like it's a lot of work not only for our staff, but it would be also a lot of work for a lot of ag people, a lot of additional cost.
I totally understand your question.
All right. So you understand my whole question.
Yeah, I do. And Abby made that clear too. Mayor Delgado and then Mr. Johnston.
Good morning, Abby.
Good
Thanks
morning.
For being here. Did you see the staff response on page 3 saying that no new current data is being accepted for the current listing, which is due out 2/14? Therefore, staff anticipates that it won't be until 2018 would be the soonest that these waters could be delisted. And if you saw that, do you have a...
No, you know, I didn't, and I'm not sure if that's because there aren't any automatic tests being made for the chlorpyrifos and diazinon toxins. I mean, you're getting Preservation Inc. tests and results all the time. What we're offering is to augment those with additional testing for these two materials. So perhaps, and I should probably let staffs answer that, what that means, but I think perhaps they weren't expecting that there would be additions to those tests or additional information, but that's what we're offering to fund.
So if it was true, Abby, that no new data is any longer being accepted for the 2014 listing, would that change your perspective at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's unfortunate because I believe that if you look just to the month of May, there was new data that showed that we had non-detects. And so I believe that over the next month or a few months, whatever you were to decide, we would show additional data in that same way. And so I think here's an opportunity for you to have data to show that this is unnecessary and that we can move forward with delisting. And why not take that opportunity?
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Mr. Johnston.
Yeah, I first of all, I had the same question, and I wasn't clear on the answer because I think that EPA determines if they're accepting data, that's not either within the purview of this regional board or the state board. And I guess my other question is, what is the negative impact to agriculture of this TMDL? Let's assume for the moment that this information is correct and that no new data is being accepted, so it probably is going to be listed for the next 4 years anyways. What's the negative impact to agriculture of this TMDL?
To me, just basically, if you have a TMDL on this area, then you're focusing more attention to the growers in this area through the irrigated lands order or through whichever mechanism you have for enforcement. And if it's unnecessary, it's just an unnecessary use of your staff time as well as growers' time. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into responding to staff questions about your practices, about data coming off your farm. So if it's unnecessary, we just rather see it get done and get these samples collected so that there doesn't need to be any more kind of follow-up.
My understanding is that where staff is getting information is not by querying individual farmers, but by looking at the reports that are made to the Department of Pesticide Regulation and the Ag Commissioner.
At this time, but am I wrong in assuming that if there were a TMDL, then the staff would have more of a prioritization to look into this area and look at other data sets? That's my thought and my feeling, and I would rather, if this is unnecessary, then take the steps to delist or to render this TMDL unnecessary so that staff and the growers can prioritize.
Yeah, that's not a question I can answer because our staff is run by our executive officer. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Abby? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And after we hear from Steve Shimek, you guys could respond to these questions that we've discussed. Mr. Shimek, and are you keeping track of speaker time? Because I don't see anything on my monitor here that indicates. Do you see it?
No. It's about how to start it.
Okay.
You're in the wrong seat.
Yeah.
It's not being active.
Timer controls. Let's see.
Some are asking for you to turn your microphone on, Monica.
I'll do it. Mr. Shimek.
Good morning, everyone.
Go ahead.
My name is Steve Shimek. I'm Executive Director of the Otter Project in Monterey Coast Keeper. As I always do, I want to thank you for your service. I truly appreciate it. Frankly, I could not do what you do. I'm urging you to adopt this TMDL. I do have the same concerns that Chair Young has and that were expressed during the ag waiver process, that what we see as far as declines in some of these chemicals is a switching rather than a reduction of chemical load that is potentially causing toxicity. So toxicity is the measure. I expressed that during the ag order process. So did several others. But this TMDL is about diazinon and chlorpyrifos. It is a simple fact that I believe that these waters are going to remain listed for the next few years. There is a process that we are all, some of us are familiar with of the 303D listing process, and it's a process that we stress over and go through and we comply with. And if other people want to short circuit that process, we haven't been able to do it, and I hope other people can't do it as well. So the simple fact is that these are listed and you're required to do a TMDL. The caveat that I have as far as adoption of this order has been heard before, and this was during the TMDL process for the Lower Salinas area, and that is that we actually don't know what the final ag order is going to look like. We just don't. In the extreme, there are people that are asking that we revert back to the old 2004 ag order. That ag order would be entirely inadequate to implement this TMDL. So I am simply suggesting that once the ag order is more settled and that we have hung all these things on that ag order, that we take a look and that there be a possible reopener if it is considered that these that the ag order is no longer able to implement these TMDLs. So I just simply want to get that on the record. Thank you. Again, thank you for your service, and I'm hoping that you move forward with this TMDL today. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions for Mr. Simic? Okay, thank you. That's the end of our speakers. So, Mr. Harris, if staff could maybe provide us with some responses to what we've heard and what some board members have posed.
Did I just turn it off?
There you go.
Okay. All right, I'm back. So just to reiterate, there is no new regulation by adopting this TMDL. The TMDL is a plan. Growers in the area and throughout our region are already required to implement and comply with the agricultural order. So, and we're talking about a waste of staff resources earlier and in the comments, and, you know, why do all the work again? Why bring this before the board? Why waste staff time? But I've written this. We've done the work. We've had a couple of meetings. This is what we found as of now, and we're presenting it all right now. Again, the issue of why doing the TMDL, you still need to implement the ag order, and one of the benefits of having a TMDL in your watershed is you can often qualify for grant funding because you have an adopted TMDL in your region, so you can qualify for money in the area for certain implementation measures. Another thing with the time delay, Abby is correct. In fact, what she talked about, I have written in our response to comments on page 3 in attachment 4. She's absolutely right. There's only 4 additional samples in Pajaro River you would need to collect for chlorpyrifos and 3 for diazinon. That is if they are below our water quality standard there. And however, Yagas Creek still is 19 samples away if they're all below the water quality standard. And Pajaro River Estuary for diazinon has 7. So she's correct. Some are only a few away. And I'm hopeful that we would see samples be below the water quality standard. But that doesn't address the question of Yagas, nor we're getting farther away with Pajaro River Estuary. And just a quick clarification, yes, CMP or Dow Chemical submitted more data to me in May, and she's correct with that, but it was for May of 2012. They submitted it to me in May of 2013, but just minor clarification. So our recommendation is still that you adopt this TMDL because of, because of those reasons. Sorry, that's not a good conclusion. Chris?
Yeah, let me, if I may just add a couple more things. Thank you, Shanta. Mr. Jeffries, you asked if we approve the TMDL and then, sure enough, we get more data and come to find out they're below the numeric target, then is that going to create more work for us to do basically the delisting? And the answer is no. If the board decides to adopt the TMDL today, and hopefully the data come in, and with 17 or 19 more data for Yagas Creek, and they're all below that target, we could still delist. And the TMDL will not mess that up in any way. It doesn't make any more work for us. So whether the TMDL is approved or whether it is not approved does not affect whether or not we can delist or how soon we can delist or actually request a delisting. And then when would that happen? Excuse me. When that would happen, Mr. Delgado is right. As it stands today, we cannot actually request a delisting until we have a new listing cycle. And right now we are in a listing cycle, and that data has been cut off. In other words, we are not accepting new data for the current listing cycle. So we would have to wait until the next listing cycle in order to delist. So if Ms. Taylor offered to do four samples and she paid for that, what we have to remember is that we would have those samples as well as all the samples that would be occurring from now as well as from 2006 onward, because that's when the last data cutoff was, up until the new listing cycle. So it just wouldn't be just those four data points. It would be all the data that would be gathered between 2006 and the next listing cycle, which will not get in front of this board probably until 2018. So the chances of them all being below these numeric targets, hopefully that will happen. And if we continue to see this decline, it could happen. But if it doesn't happen and you don't approve the TMDL, then we're redoing the TMDL. And then we're spending more staff time to come back and do what we're doing today.
What's involved with delisting?
What it involves...
Staff-wise, resource-wise.
Staff-wise is we collect the data, and then we develop what are called lines of evidence. And the lines of evidence then point to the listing order and say, I'm sorry, the listing policy. And the listing policy says that if you have two or more data points that are toxic, then you have to have X number that are non-toxic in order to delist. And so we would point to that order. We would have lines of evidence, and we basically say, and it would be an if-then statement, essentially. They'll point to the listing policy.
Chris, if we adopt this TMDL, does that reprioritize staff's time and focus these growers in this watershed?
Thank you. That is exactly my next point. Mr. Johnson then asked, if we adopted the TMDL, what would be the negative impact to agriculture? And Ms. Silva said that her assumption it would focus attention on the watershed and these growers. And a TMDL alone simply wouldn't do that. If we are seeing declining use of chlorpyrifos and diazinon, and if we were to see declining toxicity, why would we spin our wheels spending time on this watershed? Just because we would have a TMDL, that it is not the only factor that it is going to help us determine where we spend our time. What we're looking at is, where is the toxicity occurring? Where is chlorpyrifos and diazinon causing a problem? That is where our focus is going to be, not just because we have a TMDL. We're developing this TMDL because we think that, well, not only reason, but one of the things that we found in this TMDL is that we think that we're on a good decline here of chlorpyrifos and diazinon. It might be able to be delisted, and it really could be a success story, but it's not going to refocus our efforts by doing that. And finally, one of the comments that alluded to in written comments, that it could change the tier structure for growers, and it doesn't. If we have an impairment, that we're finding an impairment in this particular TMDL, does that then cause those growers who are in those water bodies to be bumped up to a different tier? And the answer is no. So the negative impact to agriculture from this TMDL, I don't see any.
Okay, Mr. Jeffries.
Well, the other piece of my question was, and I proposed it to Abby, how much time she need, because she asked for a delay. And the staff didn't respond. You haven't responded to that, Chris, because she basically put it in your lap, how much time would you consider? And so I'm asking, you know, what is the ramifications if the board granted that, and how much time would this be? I mean, if it's way too much, then, you know, maybe we wouldn't be considering that. But if it's a short duration, the board may consider that.
Okay, and her answer was something like, it would depend on when we would collect the samples, essentially, if we collected four samples. And again, so as Ms. Keeling has mentioned, Ms. Silva was mentioning four samples. Well, that's for one water body, but we have 19 that are required for another one, and whatever it was, 9 or 10 for another water body. So she's only talking about one of the listings. So what would their ramifications be? It would be that if all those samples came back clean, we would still have to wait until 2018 to delist. And so what would happen if they weren't clean and we couldn't recommend a delisting, then we would be right back at the board meeting asking you to approve this TMDL.
But on the other hand, if those constituents are now in decline and below the threshold, then this TMDL would be changed language-wise. Is that correct? And this TMDL is going to be a guide for the ag waiver. Is that correct?
I would say that is not, no. Two things. Your first question is, would this TMDL change if those four samples came back? Let's assume for a moment that those four samples came back and they came back clean. Would we then change the recommendations of the TMDL? What we would do is on that table where it said impaired and listed or not impaired but listed, we would have a column that would say listed, but we think it's no longer impaired. That's what would happen. But the water body would still get a TMDL. the water body will still get a TMDL for chlorpyrifos and diazinon. Remember that the agricultural order already has, through reference, or actually it's in the ag order, chlorpyrifos and diazinon targets which are equal to this TMDL. So it's not going to change the TMDL other than moving that water body, that one water body for those four samples to a different column, but it still gets the TMDL. It still gets a TMDL, and it also does not reprioritize or deprioritize agricultural program actions in this watershed.
Okay. Mayor Delgado.
Yes. regarding the requirement, Steve Shemek said that we would be required to do the TMDLs. On page 10 of attachment 2, which is the final report, it talks in section 1.1 about the Clean Water Act, and it talks about the Clean Water Act mandating states to develop TMDLs and that our board is responsible for developing those. Can you speak to whether we are required to do this or not?
Yes, the states are required through the Clean Water Act to develop TMDLs, and we have a list of requirements that EPA has given us that a TMDL must contain in order for it to be approvable by the state, and then forwarded to EPA for their final approval. EPA has final approval of power. So yes, we are required to do that. We have communicated with EPA and asked them if we have hit their checklist of all the required elements of a TMDL, and they have said, yes, we have hit the requirements for in this TMDL to meet EPA requirements. So we are required to do it. We have to have certain elements. We've included those elements, and we've verified that with EPA.
So, I mean, the confusion I have is, do we have discretion to say yes or no to these DMDLs? It sounds like we do, but sure. What you're just telling me is it sounds like we don't because we're required to do the state's job of enacting them.
Right. I would say that those are both true. The states are required to develop TMDLs. If we don't develop TMDLs and somebody in the public gets mad that we're not developing enough TMDLs or enough TMDLs at a pace that they think we should be developing TMDLs with the resources that we're getting to do so, then basically we can get sued and we can get a consent decree put on us to ramp up the volume of TMDL approvals.
All right. My other question is, in the questions I asked of staff before the meeting, I was instructed that these TMDLs would basically apply, I believe, tell me if I'm wrong, to the entire Pajaro River watershed on all water bodies, whether they're listed or not. And if I got that wrong, let me know. But can you explain that?
Yes, and it was essentially what I was alluding to when I was answering Mr. Jeffrey's question about what the ramifications be if we got four more samples and they showed up clean, you know, would it change a TMDL? Actually, no, because we're still applying the TMDLs to all the waters in the watershed. And we do that whether they are listed or not, or whether they are impaired or not, because as we move down the road and as we get more data, what we've found is that then waters become impaired in watersheds where we have already done a TMDL and we haven't specifically listed water bodies. So what staff has to do then is we have to turn around and we have to do a whole nother TMDL and come back through the whole approval process just to get a TMDL on maybe some tributary way up in the watershed. So that is why we just apply the TMDLs to all the waters in the watershed. It doesn't, again, it doesn't prompt any new requirements on any of the dischargers in these water bodies or who are operating along these water bodies. But what it does do is it saves us staff time in the future in the event that any of these water bodies become listed.
Okay, my last question. If in 2014 or 2018 some of these water bodies are delisted, the TMDLs would remain. Is that correct?
Okay. So what happens is on the integrated list, if you have a water body that is listed without a TMDL, then it says impaired and needs a TMDL. If you have a water body that is listed in a watershed where there is a TMDL, it says impaired but being addressed by an approved TMDL. And then once the water body is clean, you know, once it meets the TMDL, then it is delisted and it comes off of the 303D list altogether.
And what happens to the TMDL?
Then the TMDL is done and it is achieved. Remember that the TMDL is not a regulation. It is just a plan. It's just a plan that points to the regulation, in this case, the agricultural order, and advises the agricultural order about how to implement that order. So in this particular case, if all these water bodies became delisted, then the agricultural order implementation then would be advised. Maybe we shouldn't be paying so much attention in this watershed to chlorpyrifos and diazinon.
Do we have to go through the act of canceling a TMDL for the entire watershed?
No.
So then in 2018, the TMDL could become no longer applicable.
That TMDL would be achieved, and all the water bodies that were associated with that TMDL would be delisted, and they would come off the 303D list.
The reason it's confusing to me is because if delisted waters in the future no longer have the TMDL applicable to them, then how can the TMDL be applicable to existing water bodies in the Pajaro River watershed that are currently unlisted, which is what I heard you say. If they become impaired, great. We don't have to go through this process. There's already a TMDL that could be applied to that is applicable to them. Okay. So why wouldn't it remain in force for those that are delisted?
Okay. Well, again, you're using the word enforced, you know, and so the TMDL is not a piece of regulation. It is simply a plan. But if we play what if a little bit. And let's say that, so we have all these water bodies that are specifically listed today, and they're specifically impaired, they have TMDLs, but then we have this caveat that says all the other water bodies in the Pajaro River watershed also get this TMDL. Let's say that all the water bodies that we are focused on today, the Pajaro, the Yagas, and so on, that they achieve all of the numeric targets, and they become delisted. And let's say in 2020, then another water body then becomes listed for chlorpyrifos and or diazinon, then what happens? That's a great question. We just haven't run into that. The TMDL program is about a decade old or so. And to my knowledge, we just haven't run into that where we have all the water bodies that have achieved a TMDL. The TMDL is considered achieved, even though there is no sort of memorialization of that other than the water bodies are now delisted. But my hunch would be is that we would use a common sense approach, and that in, let's say, 2020, we had a new water body that became impaired and got on the list, but all the other water bodies had become delisted, that we would take a look at this TMDL and we would use that to advise us probably on a new TMDL, because by that time all the regulation that is being used to implement the TMDL would have changed.
We could also just simply bring that TMDL back and reopen it, and
that's
amend
probably
the TMDL
what we would
to drop the ones that are now meeting standards and yeah. add the one that is not.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Johnston, then Dr. Hunter.
Just one question. We've been around about the fact that data is not being accepted for the current delisting cycle, and I'm just a little confused because my understanding was that it's the EPA that makes that decision as to what data is being – is it the EPA or us that is – making the decision on when data is accepted?
It's actually the state. The EPA mandates that we develop these lists, but then the state then implements a strategy for collecting the data where they have a certain specific period of time when they say this is the period of time that we're going to collect the data and then we're going to analyze that data.
So when you say we're no longer accepting data, is that the region or the state?
State.
The state. Okay, so that's beyond the purview of this regional board.
Correct.
Thank you.
So let me give you an update on what's happening with the TMDL program in terms of listings. So for however many years now, since about 2000 or so, the listing for the state, the listing cycle has been every 4 years. And as the program has developed and as our data systems have developed and people kind of got into the flow of things, the amount of data that we've had to process has gone through the roof. And you can see that in how long it is taking now to process the data. We did build a data system to handle the listing data, but the 2012 listing still isn't done. And at this point, the state board is in conversation with US EPA to do what other states have done, and that is we're now going to break up the state into three different segments, you might, you know, we're going to break the regions up into three different listing cycles. So every 2 years, different regions will go through a listing cycle so that we can process the data. Right now for this, if EPA approves this, the regions that are going to go first are going to be region 1, 6, and 7. Region 3 will be in the next cycle, and I just sent an email up to Sacramento, and you know, the estimate is we would complete our cycle somewhere around 2016, somewhere plus or minus in that period. What that means also is that we're going to reopen. They will reopen the solicitation for data. So if Abby does the additional monitoring and things come up clean, she's going to have an opportunity to provide that data, and we will have an opportunity to do the delisting. We have to do the delisting as part of an official 303D listing submittal to US EPA. We can't do an ad hoc, so even if we get the data today, we can't submit a request for delisting until our official list goes to US EPA, so that would be around 2016 or so.
Okay, Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. Mr. Johnston asked part of my question, so just to keep it brief, on the amendment that Mr. Harris said could be another approach. When you create an amendment, again, getting to this data and time frame issue, does the state require not just numbers of samples with non-detect, but is there a time frame also that's required? So an amendment would cover a period of time, like 2 years or 3 years. Is there something that dictates how long the period is, not just because it clearly we could get 19 samples in one day, you know? So it strikes me that there must be some time frame that would give us a trend that we're looking for.
There actually is, and what we, the regions, have to do is we have to follow the listing policy. And for delisting, for listing and delisting, it's all laid out exactly what you do, even taking into account temporal variations, spatial variations, where you take the samples. All of that it's all laid out. It's all consistent statewide now, so we would just follow the statewide policy.
Okay. We have an order before us, a recommendation. Any further board discussion? Okay. Want to wish to make a motion?
I move adoption.
Okay.
I will second.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion, say aye. Any opposed, say no. All right. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we take a break for a few minutes?
Excellent.
10 to 15 minutes. And when we return, Mr. Harris, we're going to start with agenda item 7, correct?
Correct.
And then move back down that list, 7, 8, 9, and 10. Oh, yes. Well, we can start with you have a report to give us then? Okay. We'll start with that then.